Welcome to Radioactive Magazine. We will be speaking with Paige Barrows about her work delivering humanitarian aid to Ukrainians negatively impacted by the current Russo-Ukraine war. This broadcast is excerpted from an interview with her shortly before she left on a trip to Europe and Ukraine. Between 2010 and 2012, she served in the Peace Corps in Ukraine and is now a board member of Stand With Ukraine KC. She has personally raised over $37,000 in cash and humanitarian aid for people there. This included helping needed surgeries for infants orphaned by the war. Paige pays for all her personal expenses, but is asking donations for humanitarian supplies, et cetera, so that she can deliver to various Ukrainian communities. Links for how to do that are available in the description of this episode of Radioactive Magazine. Go to kkfi.org, then News and Public Affairs, then Radioactive Magazine. So Paige, please first correct any errors in what I've just said and add anything else you'd like.
Nope, it was all correct. Thank you.
So what are the most important things you'd like our audience to know about this, the situation in Ukraine today and your work there?
I would say that despite the significant decrease in national media coverage here in the U.S., there are still more than 40 million people being affected by Russia's brutal attacks every day. And also, while we're, it's great Ukraine has received so much military support, but there's still a huge need for humanitarian aid, both for, direct victims of attacks and, kind of secondary victims, or, for example, internally displaced people, that had to flee their homes and with nothing but the shirts on their back. So I've just tried to focus my fundraising and volunteer work on that side, the humanitarian aid aspect. And I have several colleagues and trusted friends who I've been in touch with since I lived there, and they've really helped me kind of facilitate some of this work in country. And so we've been able to help, as I mentioned, internally displaced refugees, orphans, wounded soldiers, wounded civilians, just everyone that you can possibly think of. I've been really fortunate that I have contacts in a lot of different areas. So that's kind of what my focus is on. And I am enthusiastic, I guess is the word I would use, to go there and be able to administer some of this help in person.
Great. So sketch for us your general itinerary without giving any details that might increase the dangers for you or people with whom you're trying to help.
Yeah. So I'm trying to be pretty careful about what information I'm sharing for various reasons, but I will, obviously you can't fly into Ukraine right now, so I will be flying into a different European country and traveling over the border. I'll be visiting various communities, primarily in the central and western regions. Listeners have been following, most of the heavy battles at this point are in the east and south and southeastern regions of the country. So I'll primarily be staying in the western and the central areas. I plan to avoid big cities in general, because that's where a lot of the missiles and rocket attacks are kind of concentrated, or they're aiming at the cities. So I'm going to be visiting, with the help of a team of Ukrainians over there, I'm going to be visiting different groups, including school children, orphans, a home for developmentally disabled young women, wounded veterans, it's going to be a very busy trip, I'll put it that way. So it's going to be a lot of travel and a lot of work, but I think I have I'll have some good help with me as well.
That's great. So how do you decide whom to help?
So, I mean, while I've been here, it's heavily relied on, the contacts that I have over there and who they're in touch with, who they, for example, there's a Ukrainian nonprofit that's existed for several years. And they help, they're just, you know, they raise money for all sorts of different groups. They feed the hungry. They, you know, buy supplies for a NICU unit. They're involved in so all of those groups that I already mentioned and more. So, you know, with that group, I'm able to kind of spread out the aid a little bit more. You know, there's a village that I work with that has over 500 internally displaced people. And, you know, so just kind of depending on where I have, you know, contacts over there, it'll be a little bit different. You know, those will be my starting points when I'm over there. But I'm sure, you know, as we're traveling, there may be things that come up or, you know, opportunities. We definitely are going to have to be flexible. So I'm sure opportunities will arise and we'll be able to help different groups that I haven't had contacts with or hadn't been able to help previously.
And so how do you decide what specifically to take?
Yeah, so I'm bringing some like actual supplies with me. I'm a little limited just because of, you know, luggage. I'm going to have help once I'm there, but I also don't want to risk losing any luggage. I'm kind of stressed about that. So I did ask several contact groups for ideas, like what do you need right now? And you know, a lot of them, I asked a couple of months ago and they said, we have to wait, let's wait till closer to the time because, you know, the needs are, everything changes there so rapidly. So they've kind of been sending me some ideas, some lists of things that they're either short on or they don't have good quality of. And so I had an Amazon registry set up online. And so I had several people purchase items. You know, some people, instead of sending money, you know, they like being able to help provide tangible items. So I had several people order items off of there, including like tourniquets, special bandages, treatment for burns and burn, you know, burn victims.
Do you have contacts in the other country that I'm thinking? I know there's Amazon ships worldwide. Well, not to every country, but I'm sure I know there's Amazon DE, Deutschland, Germany.
Yeah, so I do have friends. They're friends from Ukraine that have a few years ago moved to that other country, and so they're going to be there and help, you know, receive me, help me, you know, pick me up from the airport and everything, and help me get over to the Ukrainian border. So I do have contacts there, and they've been purchasing some, you know, supplies as well. So they're familiar with where, you know, where to buy the things that are most needed.
Right, right. Presumably, if you buy stuff off Amazon, you can have it delivered to them, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. So we've talked about, I've heard about Stand With Ukraine KC. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so Stand With Ukraine KC is a 501c3 in Kansas City. It was established in 2022, last year, after the most recent attacks began on February 24th. It's a nonprofit that was started by Ukrainian Americans, you know, Ukrainians who were born in Ukraine, but now are permanent residents here in the U.S., as well as one man who served in the Peace Corps in Ukraine, which coincidentally is also, I'm a returned Peace Corps volunteer from Ukraine. So that was kind of cool and kind of how I got connected with them initially. I was asked to join the board in March of this year, but I had been volunteering with them since I think April of last year. And so I had good relationships with them. As far as what the organization itself does, they organize events, everything from rallies to, welcome picnics and annual picnics for the local Ukrainian community to help integrate the recently, whether they're temporarily or permanently displaced here in Kansas City, just to kind of, you know, help that community, bring that community together, and as well as provide, you know, finding furniture or kind of providing supplies that they may need once they arrive. And so really And then they've also, you know, they fundraise. Stand With Ukraine KC does fundraise, and they do also do like rapid response grants and purchase and ship supplies over to Ukraine. So they kind of really focus both on, you know, the humanitarian aid in Ukraine as well as the Ukrainian community here in Kansas City. Because, you know, Lord knows they've needed a lot of support over the last 15 months. That's who Stand With Ukraine KC is in a nutshell.
Great. So talk about their involvement in your current efforts.
Yeah. So, I mean, first and foremost, they provide me moral support. They're very supportive of me. They always have been throughout, you know, the last year. They, you know, share a lot of my individual efforts on social media. They actually allowed, when I started fundraising last year, it wasn't really, I kind of accidentally started doing it when friends were just saying, hey, I know you can get this money to where it needs to go versus going through, you know, a larger organization that maybe has overhead or administrative fees. So this year, you know, as I started fundraising for this trip, they also offered me the option to, they could, you know, if someone needed a tax receipt or just felt more comfortable donating through an official 501c3 organization, they could do that. And then as a result, you know, I'm going to be administering it as a grant. So basically, you know, I'm going to be the one that's physically there as a representative facilitating that rapid response grant. So overall, they've done as much as they possibly can, I think, given the situation for me. And I'm really grateful to have them, you know, their support. And I'm really looking forward. As I said, I just recently joined the board, and I'm really looking forward to doing a lot more work with them in the future.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that the gratitude is reciprocated. Mm-hmm. So we are talking with Paige Barrows about her work delivering humanitarian aid to people negatively impacted by the current Russo-Ukrainian war. So how did you get involved with this, Paige?
How did I get involved with Ukraine?
Or how did you get involved especially in delivering aid to victims of the Russo-Ukrainian war?
So as you mentioned earlier, I served in the United States Peace Corps there for a little over 2 years in 2010 to 2012. And thanks to the internet, I stayed in really close touch with a lot of friends. I was fortunate in that I picked up the language fairly well and had a lot of close friendships formed while I lived there. So I stayed in touch with them. I went back to visit in 2019. And so, you know, Russia initially attacked Ukraine in 2014 with the Maidan revolution, and that was really difficult. I had come home about a year before that, so that was tough to watch from over here. But you know, once these more recent attacks started in February of last year, I think getting involved and doing this is the only thing that like kept me from just going crazy or just you know, breaking down. It's just been something that I've been able to I've done my best to put all the negative energy, you know, into something a little bit more productive. So selfishly, I do it a little bit for myself, but also because it's just the right thing to do. And if I have, you know, I have the capacity and the capability and the support of my community, which I do, it just worked. And so this trip is a culmination, I would say, of my volunteer work. You could say over the past year, or you could say even since, you know, I joined the Peace Corps, because that's also voluntary. So
yeah, well, I was reading Le Monde Diplomatique from last March, had an article that basically said that that the media are the vanguard of the war party. There are no honest journalists, at least even in the European and U.S. and European media on this issue. They're all taking one side. So it's
yeah, I know, and I see that. And, you know, I've been fortunate. I've gotten to know some of the local journalists around here in Kansas City, and they, you know, they have good hearts, and they truly are passionate and want to help. And so they do their best to support me and, you know, our organization and everything. But yeah, definitely. when it comes down to it, a lot of those people around the world are, you know, it's their job. And so they're going to do what they think is going to make them the most money. And unfortunately that's, you know, that's not how it should be, but that's how it is.
Yeah, right. Just riffing on this just a little bit further. In the 1980s, during the Contra War in Vietnam and in Nicaragua and the other troubles in Central America, Noam Chomsky said that without the activism of a lot of folks, President Reagan, who was president at that time, would have sent the U.S. military in there. Instead, he had to violate U.S. law and send proxies.
So what's interesting about that, and I like that, and because I've, you know, through this kind of volunteer work, I've had the opportunity to meet with so many amazing volunteers here in the US. There's, you know, there I have a large network. I think there's like 1300 of us of returned Peace Corps volunteers from that served in Ukraine who have, you know, it's incredible what we've been able to get done collectively, as you know, everything from arranging logistics, getting full truckload shipments in, fundraising, just everything. And a lot of them have gone over to help in person, depending on, you know, what their skills or their, you know, in different ways basically. But even more that I'm proud to be part of that group, but I mean that volunteerism goes, that trickles down. I mean, that's all the way to the civilians in Ukraine. For example, there are a few groups of people that I know that are just volunteers who, since day one, since February 24th of last year, have volunteered, you know, day and night, and just given everything they possibly can. And you know, Ukrainians, you know, communities are still fundraising and collecting money. I heard someone tell me at one point, they said everything to the front. And that really stuck with me because, you know, when fortunately for myself and Americans, we, you know, we haven't had to in our lifetimes had to cope or deal with or live through war here in our own country. But boy, you know, when it's sometimes in your own backyard, for Ukrainians, you know, they are working together as a large system, their, you know, system. And so, yeah, those volunteers that are just, whether they're cooking food for the groups or they're, you know, running supplies out to the front lines and stuff, it's just been really incredible to see that kind of, you know, here we maybe have the privilege to say it's a passion, you know, so I can describe that. I'm passionate about it, and that's why I volunteer. For them, it's not necessarily a choice, but you know, but they're still doing it. They're still here nearly 15 months later and still just devoting so much of their time and energy because they understand, you know, everything has to go to the front. They have to protect their, you know, their land and their families and their homes.
Talk about your foreign language skills.
So interestingly enough, I studied Spanish in school for 8 years. When I try to speak Spanish anymore, Ukrainian just like pops up right in front of it. So that's pretty frustrating because I was pretty good at Spanish at one point. But so when I went over to Ukraine, I only found out that I was going to Ukraine with the Peace Corps about a month before I left. And it's, you know, they use the Cyrillic alphabet. It's completely different than the Latin alphabet that we use for English. So it was a little overwhelming because they even certain sounds are not typical sounds that we make in when you speak English or Spanish or French. So you know, when I went over, I kind of had looked at the alphabet and tried to practice some of the sounds, but I didn't really know a word of Ukrainian. Once we arrived, depending on which region they were going to place the volunteers, which at the time when I went over, there were 400, the Ukraine, The Peace Corps program in Ukraine was the largest program in the world, and there were 400 volunteers there at that time. So, which, you know, just to give you an idea that Ukraine land-wise is a little bit smaller than Texas. So there were a lot of us, but depending on which region we were going to be assigned to for our service, we were divided into groups that would either learn Russian or Ukrainian, because, you know, certain regions, they speak Russian. I mean, every Ukrainian can understand and speak Russian, but they primarily speak Russian more in the east and the south, and then in Kyiv, in the capital, whereas Ukrainian is spoken more in the west, and then kind of a mixture in the central region where I was. So I, you know, the first 3 months when you're there, we did, I lived with a host family who didn't speak any English. So there was a lot of charades going on and miscommunication. It was definitely challenging, but I was fortunate that I had a great host family. And we did it really intense language training. Like the classes were 8 hours a day. We did do some cultural, you know, cross-cultural training and job training, but you know, some of us picked it up a little bit better than others. And fortunately for me, I picked it up pretty well. And then because, you know, I mentioned I made some good friends over there. And when I actually, you know, made it to my village after the 3 months of training, and I lived there for 2 years, I had some great friendships, and most of them didn't really speak English, or they weren't comfortable enough to, you know, try. It made them nervous a little bit. So I got a lot of practice, a lot of full immersion practice. So, you know, for several years after I came back, I really didn't have the opportunity to speak it, because there's not a lot of, you know, when I would very occasionally run into a Ukrainian here in Kansas City, they often spoke Russian. So I had a little practice when I went back to visit in 2019. And then over the last year, I've had so many opportunities to speak Ukrainian. And I've also gotten a lot better at reading and writing it, because that's one thing I couldn't do previously.
I assume you picked up a little bit of Russian while you were there also, or not?
Yeah. So the region I was in, right in the center, they really spoke a mixture of Russian and Ukrainian, and kind of a dialect, if you will, called Surzhik, kind of stuttered there, which is kind of a kind of in between combination of the two. And so especially when I first arrived at my site, I explained to people, you know, I studied Ukrainian, so please, if you could, try to speak Ukrainian to me, because it's easier for me to understand. So a lot of my friends and my students would purposely speak Ukrainian to me when they were communicating with me. So I still got to practice that a lot. But a lot of people, you know, there were people from Russia in the village where I lived. And so of course they were speaking Russian, and, you know, a lot of, older generations, you know, who spent a lot of their adulthood living in the USSR, where Ukrainian kind of, you know, they really pushed the Russian language during that time. So they've just been speaking Russian, you know, for most of their lives. They learned Ukrainian in school. Of course they can understand it, but point is that I can understand Ukrainians speaking Russian fairly well. It's a little bit harder for me when I'm listening to a Russian with a Russian accent speaking Russian, especially when it's quick. But I can definitely get by. I would say they're pretty similar. You know, Ukrainians always say that they're really similar, but I think that's, you know, they also grew up bilingual and speaking and understanding both of them. So from someone who really only studied Ukrainian, I think that they're yes, they're similar, but not that similar to me, right, in my opinion.
Right. So you mentioned students. So what did you do in the Peace Corps while you were there?
Yeah. So, the Peace Corps has several different sectors. I think there's five or six of them. And it's everything from education to healthcare, you know, a lot of AIDS, HIV education, agriculture. There's some business development. Don't remember the other ones. So depending on your qualifications, your you know, if you have a degree, if you have work experience, if you have a lot of volunteer work and so on, you'd be nominated for one of those categories, essentially. So I was initially nominated for teaching English as a foreign language. Mm-hmm. So I, that's what I did. I worked in my primary job was working in a village school, the main village school, and I taught English. I kind of co-taught, especially in the beginning with the two English teachers there. I would say the second year, they kind of let me go a little bit more on my own, especially when my Ukrainian improved, so I could speak to the students who didn't understand English very well, and we could communicate. So that's primarily what I did. I taught English to 5th through 11th grades, which they only have 11 grades there. They don't go up to 12 like we do here. Mm-hmm. But besides that, I did after school tutoring. I organized an English club, after school group as well. I did a lot of volunteering during the summertime. There were summer camps and English language summer camps. So I'd go to travel to different towns and help out, other Peace Corps volunteers run these camps, and kind of just did whatever was asked of me, you know, but yeah, so that was my primary job there.
Okay, well, we're about out of time. Any final words for our audience?
I would just like to thank Kansas City and my community for their support of Ukraine, but also me personally. I'm really looking forward to what else we can do in the future, and I'm really proud of what we've been able to do, what we have done. So thank you, Kansas City.
Well, and we thank you, Paige Barrows. We've been talking with Paige Barrows about her work delivering humanitarian aid to Ukrainians negatively impacted by the current Russo-Ukraine war. More on that, including how you can support her efforts if you wish, is available in the description of this episode of Radioactive Magazine. Go to kkfi.org, then News and Public Affairs, then Radioactive Magazine. Paige is paying all her own expenses and works to ensure that 100% of everything donated is actually delivered to people who need it, with nothing sucked up in overhead. Tune in next week when I will be speaking with Lakota Chief Black Spotted Horse and Joy Ellsworth about their May 23 to 29 horse ride through Kansas City dubbed Trail of Mending. More information on that is available in the description of that episode of Radioactive Magazine on kkfi.org. I'm Spencer Graves. Thank you for listening.